afternoon. So, last time, we talked more about nmap. We mentioned that this lets us see files as part of our memory, and it actually had these sort of two nodes in which it could operate. We could have this shared mapping, where what we saw was really the file, that if we modified that part of our memory, it modified the file, meaning that anything else that was accessing the file would see those changes right away. In order to make that happen, we learned that, well, it turns out we have sort of one cached copy of the file that we're keeping in memory, and that's what pages we're accessing when we access that memory. It's going to be set in our page table to point to that cached copy. We also had private mappings, which are like a private copy of the file, and the way that worked is that, well, it would be copy on write. So we'd load that private copy, you know, using the same cached pages, and if we made changes to our private copy, then we would have a copy of those pages which were changed. But for the ones which weren't, we wouldn't go through the effort of actually making a copy, just like what we saw with forking. And we saw that the way Linux sort of treats process memory is it kind of treats it as a list of nmap calls. It just turns everything into something which could have been an nmap call. And that's what it looks up things in when there's a page fault. And the page fault, it says what's supposed to be here. It looks at what nmap call covered this region. And that's how it knows what, you know, how to handle that page fault. Is it valid? Well, was there an nmap for it? Where did I get the data from? Depends what was mapped. And we learned that, well, if we're caching the data from files, we can have this idea that memory is kind of a cache for disk. And for files, this makes a lot of sense. Files are things which we think of as being stored on disk, be it a hard drive or an SSD or some sort of thing that's in this permanent storage that's slower than memory. And so if we think of how nmap works and this general idea that we have cached copies of the data from files, it makes sense that memory is a kind of a cache for that. It makes a little less sense for things like the heap, the stack, which we learned are also going to be managed in a similar way. But what we'll do for those things is we'll assign a location on disk. We do this swapping thing where we said, you know, if we have our heap that we want to free up memory from, we'll just save that heap to disk somewhere. Also, we'll do something similar for if we have a private copy of something that we want to free up that memory, we'll save that to disk somewhere. And so by giving everything a place on disk when we need it, we end up having this sort of general notion that all of the data really has a place on disk and memory is just storing it because it's faster than disk temporarily, but memory isn't going to fit everything that fits on disk, so it's a cache. It's only going to store the most useful part. And we talked about sort of data structures to manage this. So if this is a cache, how are cache hits handled? Well, we have two types of cache hits. We have cache hits where we have a process trying to access some virtual address. In that case, this is normally handled by the processor. So the processor looks things up in the page table, and the page table should already have been set up, and that's going to be our cache hit. The page table says it's at this physical page. The processor handles that. The OS is not actually involved. The OS did all the work beforehand. We also have cases where we like read a file, and there's a cache version. So the OS needs to handle that. When we have a read system call, the OS needs to look up, where did I keep a copy of this file? And use that to handle the read call. And similar with write. And we also have sort of to deal with cache misses. So what happens if the program tries to access something that isn't in the page table? Well, that's going to trigger a page fault. The OS needs to be able to look up, where is this data supposed to be in memory, or is it in memory, and fill in the page table. And if necessary, it needs to load it from disk. And similarly, if we have a read of some data that isn't loaded yet, the OS needs to know, OK, I need to load that data from disk, have a cache version, then I can read from that. So we need some data structure where we can look up by virtual address for a page fault or on a read call or a write call, where do I actually find this stuff on disk so I can process that request. And one thing we mentioned is that if we're loading things from disk into memory, we need a place to put them. And we're going to kind of assume our steady state is that we've hopefully used all of memory to cache stuff. Why would we want to do that? Well, it's going to be faster to have stuff in memory than not, so hopefully we're making maximum use of our memory. But that means whenever we want to bring something into memory, we have to get rid of something else. We have to evict something else and replace it with the new thing. And sort of our intuition is that we want to choose things that aren't going to be used soon for that, because a typical goal we're going to have in thinking about how to do that eviction operation is we want to not have to do it very often. So we want to choose something that we wouldn't need to bring back into memory so we can save time. And we're going to look more at sort of how that works and how we can implement that practically as our next topic. But before we move on to that, questions about things we covered last time? Okay. So I mentioned we had our page replacement goals, and we were talking about how do we optimize just for hit rate. We were keeping things simple for now. So you want to minimize the amount of times we have to do a page replacement. I mentioned the best algorithm is BlazeMin. This is accessing the thing furthest in the future. So let's look at how that works. So here I have a bunch of virtual pages, which I've represented with letters, that we have to store in three physical pages that I've represented with numbers. And we have to do some page replacements. Initially, this is simple. I need to put A somewhere. Well, I have a physical page 1 that isn't holding anything. That's a good place to put it. You just put B somewhere. A physical page 2 isn't holding anything. Seems like the best choice. But as I said, our normal state is that we're going to get to a point where everything is in use. So then when we have to put D somewhere so we can access it, I don't have any choices that don't involve getting rid of something useful. So BlazeMin, we said, was the optimal algorithm. The optimal algorithm is to put in the thing that's going to be accessed furthest in the future. So I look here and I say, okay, we have D is our current access, and we can replace A. When's A going to be next access? A is going to be next access 1 unit in the future. How about B? B is going to be next access 1, 2, 3 units in the future. And C is going to be next accessed 4 units in the future. So my best option is C should be replaced, because that's going to mean that I don't have to replace anything else until we access C again, which is the longest I can wait. So I keep going. And then I have this access to C, and I make the same choice. So in this case, if we're assuming these are all the accesses, then we kind of have a tie that A and D both aren't accessed again. So they're both equally good choices, but we better not replace B because it's about to be accessed. So here I've arbitrarily chosen to replace A. And sort of that's how we resolve this with this BlazeMin policy. So questions about how I figured that out? Okay, so let's look at, I have the wrong thing highlighted here. I'm going to do at D here. So this access to D, what should it replace? Question? I'm going to pull everyone, so give people time to look at it. Like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we should replace A, physical page 1 is where we should put D. B, physical page 2. C, we have pretty good consensus on C. The way we figure that out is that C is accessed furthest in the future. So it's going to save us the most replacements, save us from replacing again for the longest time. So in D, we're going to want to replace C, even though, you know, this seems kind of unfortunate that, you know, we just put C in, but that's not what's optimal here. It's based on the future. So this policy optimizes our hit rate. Unfortunately, we can't actually implement it because I needed this sort of list of accesses, and programs don't work that way. They don't just give me that list. I have to run the program to find out what's going to happen. I generally can't know, especially it might depend on the input. So I'm going to need to, you know, have some more practical way, and I'm going to need to make my decision based on the information from before and something other things I could figure out from the program. And generally, sort of practical thing we're going to do is we're going to have an assumption. And this is an assumption you may have seen before if you have a previous course that talked about, say, processor caches extensively. And this is an assumption of locality, in particular an assumption of temporal locality, that the assumption is that if something is accessed now, it's going to be accessed again soon. And this means that I do that, take that sort of a, in reverse, that if something is accessed now, it was previously accessed relatively recently. So we have these clusters of accesses, and that's sort of temporal locality here. And if we assume that that's true, you know, if that's how things are, then we can predict what's going to be accessed furthest in the future based on what was accessed least recently. Because anything accessed recently is going to be accessed soon. If it wasn't accessed recently, it's not going to be accessed for a while. So this gives us a policy like least recently used or least frequently used as the one we want to use. And we're going to talk about least recently used, the sort of most common way you might look at it. So what does least recently used look like? So here, I have to decide where D goes. So I'm going to say, okay, so I'm looking at the access to D, and in my OS, I do not have information about the future. So I'm not going to look at that. I'm only going to look backwards. And I'm going to say, well, we just accessed B, we just accessed A, and least recently we accessed C, so D is going to replace C. I could say, okay, A was last accessed 2 units ago, B 1 unit ago, C 3 units ago, C is the winner, I replace C. And if I do this, then I get to a point here where I need to put C back in. And in this case, so I'm going to need to make a decision here. So what should I do? So who thinks C should replace A? Okay, a few people. B, D. So a bunch of people had no opinion. Let's try that again. So I'll give you a little time to think about it. So what should C here, what should it replace? We're doing least recently used, remember. So we're looking at the past, not the future. So okay, so let's try again. So C, I want to know, do I put it in page 1, 2, or 3? So does it replace A, B, or D? So we think it should replace A. Okay, B, D. Okay, so we have pretty good consensus on A, and that's because A is accessed furthest in the past versus B was just accessed in D, just so forth. So we make that comparison, that's how we get our answer. So this is sort of how we hope least recently used worked. It turns out we make basically the same decision Blaney's bin would make, because this pattern has pretty good temporal locality. That doesn't always happen. And kind of disappointingly, there's some real cases, realistic cases in which that doesn't always happen. So here, I have a program that's just scanning through something over and over again. This is something a program might do. And that something just happens not to fit in memory. And what does the least recently used policy do? Well, it does pretty much the worst possible thing. We're always replacing the thing we're about to access. Versus if we did Blaney's bin, we'd have this more intelligent sort of setup. But we can't really implement that because, well, you know, we need to know the future. Maybe we could guess in this case, but question of how we would do that. And we'll get back to this issue of, well, you know, that LRU works great when that locality assumption is hold. Here it didn't. Here, accessing A meant I wasn't actually going to access it for a while later. We don't have good temporal locality, but this pattern isn't really that contrived. So we're going to talk about how we might deal with that issue later. So let's go through, let's do another LRU exercise so quickly. Seems like people were reasonably comfortable. So here, another scenario. I'm accessing C, where do I put it? Okay, so who would like more time? Okay, so who thinks it should replace A? B? D? Okay, so the LRU policy says it replaces B because B was accessed less recently than A or D. It turns out this was a rather poor choice because then we need to access B right away, but we didn't know that. We don't have knowledge of the future. So what is B replaced? So who thinks? A little bit of time. So who thinks it should replace A? C, D. So we have pretty good consensus on A. Yes, so I think people are reasonably comfortable. And for this last example, A. What does A replace? Well, the most recently accessed thing is D, so not that. And C is going to replace B. Okay. So we know how least recently used works, so can we just implement that? And hope we don't run into that weird case where, you know, it was not the right pattern. And we can. So the way we can implement it is we can have a doubly linked list of pages where the head of the list is the most recently used thing, and therefore the tail is the least recently used thing. And whenever something is accessed, we remove it from the linked list and add it to the head. And we want to replace a page, we just takes it from the tail of the list. So problem with this scheme is that we need to manipulate this linked list every time something is accessed. So if we think of when our pages are accessed, like writing a value on the stack, like changing a variable on the stack, that's an access. You know, modifying an array on the heap, that's an access. And we're saying that each time you like write an integer on the heap or read an integer on the heap, we're going to change a bunch of linked list pointers. So that's going to slow things down a ton. So that's not going to be something we can actually do. Yes, it's possible. It's not practical. It's just too slow. There's too much work to do. We could probably do this for like reads and writes, because the read and writes are usually pretty big. You know, we could actually do this bookkeeping, you know, to detect if something's read or written, but this doesn't really work for typical program memory accesses, which are so tiny and so frequent, and where normally we don't even execute the OS at all, right? We want it to go through the page table. Having code running every access means we can't do that. So what do we do instead? Well, our solution is that we're not going to be able to implement least recently used. It's just not going to be possible, not because we can't do the bookkeeping for it. So if in processor caches, usually the issue is that like it's a lot of bookkeeping to do. Here, the bookkeeping is actually not that bad in software. The problem is that we can't run code all the time to manipulate that list of free things. So what can we do that's practical? So we're gonna do something that approximates LRU. And why is this okay? Well, we're gonna look for, was something accessed recently? That's gonna be our approximation. And this means that rather than knowing when something was least accessed, I just need to know it wasn't accessed, you know, say in the last few seconds or something like that. That's gonna be a much more practical to find out, because I don't need to spy on every single access and do something each time. And it's probably gonna do about as well as actually implementing LRU. Remember, we had this sort of assumption of temporal locality that we know isn't entirely true. So we aren't really losing anything by using an approximation, because you know it's not clear that the difference between an approximation and the real LRU policy is actually anything, right? Because we know the LRU policy isn't perfect. So if we have an approximation that also isn't perfect, it doesn't mean that that approximation's actually worse. It could be about as good or as good. So how are we going to figure out if things were recently accessed? Well, there's going to be sort of the most common pattern you'll see for this is that we're going to have sort of a little bit of information we're going to track that's going to be a lot simpler than sort of updates on every access. And the typical form this takes is that we'll have some sort of tracking of a single bit for every page table entry, or you know, for file pages that aren't in page tables, you know, for associated with that page somehow, that tracks whether something is referenced or accessed. And we're going to have something set that to true when we use that page table entry or that pointer. And periodically, the OS is going to clear it. And this means that if we look at it at any time, it says, was it accessed since it was last cleared? So that is a way of knowing if it was accessed recently. So we're going to use schemes that are sort of built on this idea that we can check for accesses in a time window by clearing this reference flag and having it set on access. Okay, so questions about this sort of high-level idea that we're approximating least recently used, and that we're going to just track this bit of information for every page table entry, and that's how we're going to figure out, you know, whether something was accessed recently, by just knowing if it was accessed since we cleared this bit, rather than trying to order things carefully by exactly when they were accessed. Yes?
Are we setting this bit in user mode?
Sorry, setting this bit in user mode? So this bit is going to need to be set whenever there's any type of access using that page table entry. Or if this like is like a read, we need to set it on the read call. So because we access it on normal uses of a page table entry, user mode accesses need to trigger it being sent. We'll talk about how we actually maintain this next. Other questions? Okay, so then there's the question that you're sort of asking, like, how do we actually implement this bit, right? How do we have a bit that gets set? And there's sort of two solutions. So one solution is something the OS can do. The OS can, if we have this bit clear, can mark the page table entry as invalid, make it not present, then a page fault will happen. And in the page fault handler, it can figure out, oh,
This is only invalid because I needed to figure out if it was accessed. It can mark it as referenced, make the page table entry valid, return. And this seems kind of similar to what we were doing before with, changing that list of all the pages on every access. But here we're only doing it every time the bit flips from false to true. And by controlling how much we clear the bit, we can make that a reasonable portion of the time. So rather than happening like every time we write every time we write a value on the stack, this is going to happen like once every second or something like that, depending on how often we decide to clear the bits for referenced. Also, the hardware could help us out. So, for example, in x86, the hardware implements this functionality as part of its page table lookup. So on x86, when a page table entry is used, the hardware will set a flag in it, which Intel calls the access flag. Therefore, it's PTAA in x86 to indicate that it was accessed. Now, not all hardware supports this because we have that alternate way of doing it. But in either case, this is a lot less work than sort of our original idea of reordering that linked list, because we're only actually doing anything when we detect this, set this reference bit to 1. And we're not going to do that all the time. Unlike with the idea of changing that linked list, which we do all the time. And I talked about this for detecting accesses. There's something else we need to do related to page replacement, which is we need to detect when pages are written to. So remember when I said, we can map a file into our memory so we can write to it. And I said I could write to the file and modify something. Well, the OS needs to know if you've done that or not. Because if you have written to that file you had mapped into your memory, the OS needs to write that back to disk. If you haven't, it doesn't. And using the same technique, we can detect writes. We can mark things as read-only just to detect if they're written to, even if we don't need to make a copy. Or we can have the hardware set some bit for us. And in fact, x86 supports this. It sets a bit it calls the dirty bit. Yes? So the question is, what's the definition of recently? So here, I haven't been precise. We're going to have some precise policies that take advantage of this reference bit, where the policy will give us a notion. So in the policies I'm going to show you, we aren't actually going to target something like in the last 2 seconds or something. It's going to be basically based on how quickly we go through pages, like how recent will count. So it wouldn't be unreasonable to have something where like we try to like look in the last n seconds, but typically what I see done is basically you like scan through the pages as you need to replace things, and how much you do that sort of determines what time window you look at. And that kind of makes sense, because if we're accessing like a lot of pages, we need to care about a shorter window, right? Accesses. Other questions? Okay. So something to note about these reference bits and these dirty bits is that these are stored typically in page table entries, especially when the hardware implements them, because the hardware only knows about page tables. But we can have multiple mappings of the same physical page. So for example, if I have example.exe loaded into two different processes, well, there are two pointers to the code for example.exe. And to figure out if that code is currently being accessed, I'm going to have two page tables to look at, and I have to check both of them for where that same physical page is accessed. So in this case, physical page 8332, well, it's been referenced recently because it's referenced by process B, even though process A isn't using it. It still should be considered recently used. So the OS, when it's scanning these reference bits, or dirty bits equivalently, it needs to check every place it's used, you know, even though typically we'll maintain a separate bit for each page table, at least if the hardware is doing it. Questions? Okay, so I'm going to show you a simple scheme for approximating LRU. We're going to try to make basically the simplest use of this reference, but at least one of the ways we can do that. So this policy is going to be something I'll know as second chance. And to kind of one way of explaining this is that sort of a simple policy we could have for page replacement, maybe the simplest, stupidest one, is we just have a list of pages, and we always take the next thing on the list. So we're going to start with that idea, that we have a list of pages, I take the next thing on the list, and I use that. And that's the page I evict. And I want to do better than that. So how am I going to do better than that? Well, I'm not just going to take the next thing on the list all the time. Sometimes that thing is recently used. So I'm going to detect if it's recently used. How do I know? If the reference bit is set. So I'm going to look at this reference bit, and if it's set, I'm going to say, well, it's recently used. Let's see if it's, let's, you know, not use it right now. And let's guess that maybe it's not actually being used anymore. So just in case it's not being used anymore, I'll set it, the reference bit, to 0 and put it back at the top of the list. And the idea with that is that if it's still not being used, it will make it to the bottom of the list and the reference bit will be unset. If it's really being used, then the reference bit will get set again by the time I look at it again, and therefore I won't choose it. So the idea here is that I'm only choosing pages that make it from the top to the bottom of this list without being referenced. And if something makes it to the bottom and is referenced, I put it back on the top and give it another chance to see if it gets referenced again. So if things are referenced, give them a second chance. Otherwise, that's the page I choose to replace with the new data I need. So here, this policy both tells us how often do we clear those bits. We just clear them as we check them, basically. And also, what do I do based on the bits? So questions on policy I'm proposing before we go through examples. So let's look at how this works. So here, I've represented my list of pages. As I have physical page 1, 2, and 3, and I have some virtual pages which I'm representing with letters. And initially, my list has page 3, 2, and 1, where 1 is at the end of the list, so it's the next thing to be considered, and 3 is at the beginning. And I'm also writing here that these pages are not referenced, meaning the reference bit is clear, or that they're referenced. So initially, I have nothing in the cache, and I access A. So for A, I'm going to take this thing from the bottom of the list, page 1. I'm going to check, is it referenced? The answer is no. So I'm going to replace that page 1 with A. So I replace it with A, A gets put in. And if we're thinking of what's happening in this program, that's what I did in my page fault handler. I put A into memory and set a page table entry. And when I returned from my page fault handler, as part of the access that triggered that page fault, that A page is going to be accessed. So it's immediately going to become referenced, which is why I have it marked here, and I've used a star to mark cases where things become referenced. So then the program accesses B. That's going to trigger the same process, but with page 2. We take 2 from the bottom of the list. We check, is it referenced? No. So then I'm going to replace 2 with B, and then I return from my page fault handler, B gets accessed, so it's referenced again. And then the same thing for C, and I have some wrong coloring here. So here I'm kind of showing all these steps, and this gets a little tedious. So I'm going to sort of compact things a bit. So one way I'm going to compact things is I'm going to just represent replacing it and making it referenced as one step, even though we know that we put it at the top of the list, not referenced, but then typically it gets referenced again if it's just what we replaced. The way things become go to the top of the list and not be referenced right away is if they weren't put there because we were trying to allocate them. So here I have an access to D. So what happens on that access to D? Well, the first thing I do is I take 1 and I see, can I put D in there? And the answer is no, because it's referenced. So I put it back at the top of the list with the reference bit clear. Then the same thing happens for 2. Look, 2, you say, oh, it's also referenced, can't use that. Same thing happens for 3. And now 1 has made it all the way back to the bottom of the list, because I have no other options. And since I haven't actually accessed anything in live handling access to D, it's not referenced, so I'm going to actually replace D in there. And it's going to get immediately referenced, because after I put D in page 1, I'm going to return from my page fault handler, the access to D is going to happen, it's going to mark it as referenced. Questions about how we got that far? Yes? What's the second C? It's just redundant information. Other questions? Okay. And then we have an access to B. Now B, it's already in page 2, so we're just going to access it and I'm going to mark it as referenced. Right. So that's going to be a cache hit, but it's going to set that reference bit. It does get, some bookkeeping is going to happen, either the processor is going to do it for us, or we're going to have a page fault where we just say, oh, I wanted to see if that was referenced, let's mark it as reference return. Okay, so then let's look at here. So next, let's say we access A. So there's 2 questions here. So one is, what page does the access to A replace? So is it going to replace virtual page D, B, or C? And the second is, what's going to be at the end of our list? What's going to be the next page to consider after we do that? Give you a little bit of time to work through that. Who would like some more time? Okay, so who thinks that we're going to replace D? B? Okay, couple for B. C? It's mostly for C. So the reason why you say B is you're like looking at the bottom of the list. B is here, page 2, that's B. But it's referenced. So let's go back to our diagram here. We're going to say, is the reference bit set? The answer is going to be yes. So it's going to go back to the top of the list. We're not going to use it. We're not going to evict it. So we have to go on to the next part of the page. So what's going to end up happening is we're going to say, did I do that? Yes, I did. OK. So we're going to say, OK, 2. We can't use, so we add it to the top of the list, marked as not reference. Everything else moves down. And then we repeat the process. We still haven't found something to evict, so we need to find something else. So we're going to try 3, and 3 is not reference, so it's going to be evicted. Or I should say, so 3 is what we're going to actually replace. And then we have 2 and R, 1 R, and 3, so page C, is going to get A. And it's going to be immediately referenced because of that axis. That's going to happen when we return from our page fold handle. And also, we can see from this that the bottom of our list is going to be page 1. Okay, so questions on how I got that answer? So you can see, we implemented part of our not recently used policy by not choosing to replace B, which we just accessed. So we were at least somewhat successful in kind of achieving that goal of approximating LRU, but we weren't tracking the actual order in which things were, everything was accessed. Okay. So now, how about our next access here? What does that replace? So who thinks that we should replace D? B? A? Okay, so you have pretty good consensus on B. And what's going to be the end of our list? Who thinks it's going to be 1, 2, 3? Okay, so most people say 3, so that's what I get. And remember that 1. So we have 1 at the bottom of our list. It moves to the top as not referenced. We have 2 that gets replaced, moving 3 down to the bottom again. Okay, so questions how this works. Okay, so the second chance policy, it's practical. It's not hard to implement. It has some problems. And one of the big problems is with big memories, it's not actually a very good choice. And the main reason why is if we think of, let's say we have a list of like 32 gigs of pages, probably by the time something makes it from the top of that list to the bottom, it's likely to be referenced. And most things are likely to be referenced. And we're going to spend lots of time going through pages saying, is it referenced? Yes, it is. Is it referenced? Yes, it is. Is it referenced? Yes, it is. Before we find something to evict. And also, when we do that, often something will be referenced, maybe because it was referenced a couple minutes ago, when rather than a couple seconds ago. We don't really have a way of distinguishing that. And we'd like instead some way of kind of choosing the sensitivity, that we don't want it to just depend on how big our memory is relative to how fast we access new pages. We kind of want some way of tuning sort of what time period we pay attention to, because we know sort of intuitively that we want things that are accessed recently. So we'd like to be able to sort of define what recently means in some way. So there's an extension of the second chance policy, which is the policy that Linux at least has used for non-file pages, for things like heap and stack. Linux calls this seek. And what Linux does is it divides things up into two lists. Instead of having one, we have a list that is called the active list and a list that's called the inactive list. And the idea here is that the inactive list is meant to represent pages that we expect aren't active and that we'd like to evict. So the question is, how do we put things on that? And what we're going to do is we're going to have an active list that's probably pretty big. When a page makes it to the bottom of the active list, we're going to start it at the top. It's going to make it to the bottom after a while. And we're going to guess that something that made it to the bottom, maybe it's not really being used anymore. That guess could be wrong, but that's going to be our guess. So we're going to put it on the inactive list. Sometimes that guess is going to be wrong. And whenever we see one of these pages referenced, we're going to move it back to the active list. And if it makes it all the way from the top of the inactive list, when we add it guessing that it's not still used, and it confirms that really it's not being used for that long, then we're going to actually evict it. And this gives us some notion that it wasn't accessed recently, where recently is defined based on how long it takes a page to get from the top to the bottom of this list. How long is that going to be? Well, it depends how fast we go through pages. But unlike our prior scheme, I can change the size of this inactive list to tune how long that is. And also to control how much time I'm spending, like checking reference bits, right? Because I only check reference bits in this subset of memory rather than everything. So questions about this policy here? Sort of where we have this inactive list that we try to keep things on until we see them being referenced, in which case we remove it, put it back on the active list. Yes?
When do we set the reference bit to false?
So we're going to presumably do that when we add it to the inactive list. Other questions? And yeah, I guess in this policy, I should say, usually we wouldn't care about what happens to the reference bit while it's on the active list. Yes?
If the reference bit is being set to false and then put on the inactive list, how would the inactive page be referenced?
How would it be referenced? So the reference bit is set to false by the OS. But if the page is actually accessed, either we'll have hardware help setting the reference bit to true in the page table entries, and the OS can detect that later. Or the OS will make the page invalid, so it will detect it with a page fault. And I believe in Linux, like, we'll periodically scan the reference bits in the page tables to implement this move it off the inactive list part of the policy. Other questions? So the question is this similar to the sort of doubly linked list true LRU policy? So all of our policies have been similar to that, except that we don't move things in the list long. We're still following the idea that we're going to keep an order, right? In this case, the order is not fixed. In the second chance case, the order was fixed, but sort of where we were starting was that, you know, the thing I'm considering next is the thing that was added longest ago. Here, the order changes based on when things get removed from the inactive list. And that's kind of a deliberate feature, even though, no, we can't shuffle the order around all the time, which the true RLU policy would do. Other questions? questions? Okay. So this is sort of a different way of choosing when to scan reference bits, how often to scan them. And we can kind of generalize this. There's kind of a family of policies we can consider where we like periodically scan through reference bits and like keep some information about it. Sort of most generally, we could imagine we could just keep a history of what reference bit was set when over some time periods, and we can use those bits to make a decision about what's most likely, least likely to be used in the future. Sort of that's a general idea we could have. Commonly, these sorts of policies are called clock algorithms. Sort of analogy that people are thinking of is you can imagine arranging all our pages in a circle and kind of like we're scanning through them like the hand of a clock, an analog clock that is, you know, checking if it's referenced, setting the bit, and keeping this history. And that's sort of how we're keeping track of what's recently used and using that information for our page replacement. So you see that, you know, this is kind of a generalization of what you saw with that active and inactive list, where, you know, you can generalize this to having sort of more detailed information about when accesses were seen. Linux hasn't really found that worthwhile to do. Okay, so we've talked a bunch about these policies, and sort of the key goal of these policies was you're approximating least recently used. Least recently used, I mentioned, isn't always good. So, exercise, let's do here. So, which of these are cases where LRU is not so great? So I'll give you a little time to look at these. Tell me which ones you think are LRU is not good for. This is for managing this data. So, based on how it would typically be accessed. Well, data or code. Who'd like some, who has a proposal of one thing that LRU might be bad for? Yeah.
Global
variables. So what's wrong with using LRU for global variables? What's gonna be poor about that? Okay, so you don't know if the locality assumption holds. So we're accessing the initial values of global variables. You think we're not going to access them again soon. So why not? So don't we usually have locality for variables?
Yeah.
So what's different about these global variables? So, but you're right, you want to look for some deviation from locality, but the question is, why are these global variables different than normal variables, and how they have locality? Does anyone have a proposal for what might make them different? So you say that you might always want to have them in your page table. So do you think LRU wouldn't do that?
I think LRU might
use them in the future. Okay, so think it might not use them in the future. So I agree that, yeah, if you don't use them very often, LRU might evict them. But I think that might be the right choice. I think the thing that's probably the interesting part of this, which we'll get back to later, is this initial part. But we'll get back to that later. So anyone else have proposals for any of these that's bad for LRU is bad for? Any of them. Where, you know, we would prefer this data not be managed with the least recently used policy. Because it would perform pretty poorly. Yes?
The last one.
So why the last one? So question, your concern is that if they're frequently requested, LRU could replace them when we don't want to do that. So I agree, it would be better to pin them, but I think that LRU is probably fine, you know, probably recently used most of the time. LRU is okay, but maybe not optimal. So I think you're right. It's not the best we could do if we knew there was frequently accessed, but it's probably close. So there's some of these where LRU is not only not the best, it's like really far from the best. Yeah. The fourth one. So what's wrong with the fourth one? So it would take a really long time to download it, and what will you push back to your list?
Like before it even finishes, it'll retrieve the next least recently used.
The next least recently used. So you're saying that we're usually accessing, so before it finishes, what? So we're downloading a movie and I'm not sure I understand. So we're accessing things that are putting on our list, right? Or say, if we're doing like second chance or something. And what are you concerned is going to happen?
If it's retrieving the least recently used, then.
So you're saying the clients are often getting the least recently used thing?
Yeah.
So why is that?
Sorry.
So why is the thing the clients are accessing the least recently used thing? Why would that be the case?
What if they want to download a different movie that isn't the least recently used?
So they want to download a different movie, that different thing. So you're saying the thing the client wants to download next is likely to be something that hasn't been downloaded recently. Is that your concern? Yes, and I would agree. And I think we don't need to consider multiple movies even with one movie, because it doesn't fit in memory. a client's going to want to start downloading the beginning of the movie. And if some other client just finished downloading the end, well, that's the least recently used thing. So we're going to often get into scenarios where, because the client's downloading the least recently used part of that thing, even if it was cacheable. This is more of a concern for 3 than 2. So here is, you know, if we're going to watch the movie again, we're going to watch from the beginning. So we're not going to, so that's the least recently used thing, and the downloading has the same problem. For the downloading, it might not be so bad, because at least if 2 clients are downloading the movie at the same time, we're okay. We're getting some advantage there, but often, you know, you're going to start at the thing that the last person who downloaded the movie ended at. Didn't start it at, so it's the longest to go. So these patterns here, sort of, the problem is the next thing accessed is first from previous session. So we have sort of the opposite of the LRU, of the locality assumption. The thing accessed longest ago is what was going to happen. So I think these two are probably the most obvious cases. Any other examples people want to call out? Yeah. So question, why does I expect someone to restart the movie? I don't expect that. But as far as if there's any reason to cache it, you know, the part I want to cache is the beginning. Right? The stuff I just watched, they're not going to go back to, if we're assuming they go from beginning to end. So if I do want to keep something in memory to speed things up in the future, I want to keep the beginning of the movie in memory, not the last part we just watched. Does that answer your question? Okay. Any other proposals for other things here that might be poor fits for LRU? Okay. So I have one example here. Files that are parsed when loaded, overwritten with save. So let's say I have a program that copies from a file into an in-memory data structure. Let's say I'm making a word processor, and I have some nice compact format for my word processor files, and I parse that into something that's easy to manipulate in memory and display. And then when I save the file, I overwrite it with something produced from my in-memory data. In that case, you know, I'm going to read once, and never again. And that means there's no reason to cache that data I just read. It's not going to help us. Because the next thing I'm going to do with it, I'm going to replace it with something else that's going to be generated from it anew. So this would be another sort of common pattern that programs have of loading a file, copying it into an in-memory data structure, then overwriting it later, where LRU performs pretty poorly. And what I was trying to get at with the example of global variables is that here I said the initial value of global variables. So this is sort of the template for copy on write. So if these are typically just changed by copy on write, we actually aren't likely to access them again soon, right? There's kind of what we're loading initially, and it might not be so great for LRU. On the other hand, if we're starting the shell a lot, yes, we would want to keep them in memory, and LRU would do a good job at that. Like we're starting shells all the time, which, yeah, is something you might do. You have the script that runs the shell. Okay. So that's some examples of things that LRU is good and bad for. I'd say LRU is very good for this code for handling out-of-disk space errors. If you are having many out-of-disk space errors, probably LRU will not keep the code loaded. If you are having out-of-disk space errors, it will keep it loaded, and probably that's the right thing, because if you have an out-of-disk error now, you're likely to have one in a second. And frequently requested HTML files, I mentioned, yeah, that LRU does a good job, maybe not the best you could possibly do, but it does a good job. So there's these two common patterns that come up actually in real programs where LRU is maybe not so great. One is where we only read things once, like loading a file to copy it into a memory data structure, or reading that movie, One is where we're doing scans of things that are too big to fit in memory in order, which means that, you know, the first thing we scanned is going to be what's evicted because we run out of space. And since these are both common, some OSs might want to do something about it. And in fact, Linux has had this problem. So Linux at least has supported policies that, you know, will use a different replacement policy for file data. Because file data is the sort of data where we're likely to have these exceptions. And the idea of what Linux has chosen to do, at least in some configurations, is try to figure out if we have that read once or that scanning pattern. And the way they do it is that we delay, they have that inactive and active list, and for file data, they delay considering the pages active until that second access. So they look for two accesses separated a little bit by time. And this allows them to discard pages that are just accessed once, rather than waiting them for to go from the top of the active list all the way to the bottom and then onto the inactive list. They sort of put them on the inactive list first, basically, and see if they can prove that they're being used more than just for that first scan. Some questions about this sort of idea of making this sort of, this is sort of a common thing you'll see is like this is a little handcrafted exception to that LRU rule. We're just trying to detect the special cases and handle them better. That's a common thing you'll see OSs do if they're concerned about optimizing page replacement. Some questions about exception to LRU. Okay. So one other thing we'll talk briefly about next time, and then we'll move on to talking about devices and file systems next week, is that I mentioned at the beginning, we were talking that what we've seen so far are reactive policies, that where we, you know, we wait till the program tries to access something, and then we do all the work of being able to bring in the thing it's trying to access, to remove anything that it wasn't, or that needs to be evicted to make room for that. OSs in practice don't, you know, do better than that. We can be more proactive, and we'll talk briefly about ways of doing that, and then move on to talking about devices and files. That's where I'll leave off.